Our sense of place visit to Lafayette, Louisiana, has come to a source point. A lifelong Lafayette resident. Am I right, Michael Doucet?
Lafayette Parish, yeah.
Yeah. Now, explain how wide the parish is compared to the town.
Well, the parish is basically the county. Yeah. And when you say parish these days in Lafayette Parish, that's the rural part. And Lafayette City or city limits, but in Lafayette Parish, there are several towns like Scott and Karen Crow and Broussard, et cetera, and there are little municipalities. But it's the parish is the area, the county, and usually that was, farming or whatever. So that's the difference.
Yeah, we are a bit outside of Lafayette. Are we near where you grew up?
No, I grew up in Scott, which is about 7 miles west of here.
And what did your parents do?
Well, my father was a pilot in the Air Force, and my mother didn't want to go to South America, so she talked him into getting out of the Air Force and moved back here. His father his parents died when he was 12, and so he was raised by his sisters. He has four sisters and two brothers. And, in the old days, they called them plantations, but basically were just large farms. And you had large families. So on one side of US 90 was all my relatives. So I grew up on a farm. I mean, we had cows, we had chickens, sheep, goats, horses. And I could ride a horse, for a couple of miles and still be on a relative's property. They could look out for us, whatever. Wow. But, so it was kind of pastoral. My mother was basically, she was kind of a cripple. She had a broken back, but she was... And she went to Newcomb, graduated from there. And so, she was, they're both case. She was a LeBlanc and, traced all our, lineage back into the original Acadian. So,
so in that extended family, were there musicians in the extended family?
There still are musicians.
Yeah.
I mean, they're, it's kind of eclectic. Like on my dad's side, his sisters were ballad singers. And they would, we'd have to learn these ballads, French ballads. Oh, okay, here's another one. But they were, I'm glad we did. And then there was fiddle players on that side. And in fact, that's where I learned how to play fiddle from my uncle T. Will. And his fiddle is actually, if y'all go to Baton Rouge, it's in the LSU Museum right next to Clifton's accordion.
Wow.
On the other side of the family, the LeBlancs, they were somewhat classical trained. I mean, they had pianos, and I have a cousin who has a doctorate in trombone. I mean, how useful is that? And then, but they all play music. And they all play music. So, yeah, we just grew up with that. When we get together, before television, in the late 50s, everybody just had an instrument and just played. It didn't matter what they played. We just played.
Well, you kind of hinted at when you were talking about the French ballads, but what was your attitude towards the older music when you were a kid?
Well, it was all the same. I mean, they never used the word Cajun. We always, French, they were always used Francais or Cajun or whatever kind of described it. It was all in French. I mean, I grew up speaking French, and for me, it was no different, really, than any other music. Now, when you go to school and things like that, and you have, you kind of greet the Americans, as we say here, the English language, then it kind of changes. But we kind of looked at it as old people's music because only old people played it,
Well, you kind of had an epiphany I've read about when you were at LSU. And you were in a class, and they were totally dismissive of French music. And was it just part of your personality? You said, I'm going to find out about this and prove them completely wrong.
Well, pretty much. Yeah, it was Dr. George Foss. He and Roger Abrams wrote the book called Anglo-Saxon Folk Songs, which is the book. So, I mean, they're very knowledgeable about child ballads, blues, Native Americans and stuff. But this was in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. I raised my hand and said, well, what about our French music? And he said, he dismissed that. Said, no, that's only translated English songs. I said, oh, really? And that prompted me actually to go do research, which I've never done before. Because, I mean, there were no, you just had to know where you were from. Music came from all these parishes. And it was great finding the works of Irene Whitfield and Harry Oster and different people in the LSU archives. And, of course, I do my report on that, and I get an A. We've been friends ever since.
That speaks a little bit towards the attitude toward French people among the wider population here. And it's so funny to come to Lafayette for us, and everything is Cajun this and Cajun that, and they hang their hat on it completely, but that wasn't always so.
No, it was put down. There was no such thing as a Cajun restaurant before 1980. We didn't even use the word. Everything was Evangeline. We had a great promoter. His name was Dudley LeBlanc. He was a senator, and he created this product, this elixir called Hattacol, which cured all because it was 40% alcohol. So, of course, he drank that. But he also was very instrumental in researching the Acadian history and brought a lot of people to Nova Scotia and to Belle-Île-aux-Mers, which is where, you know, our great-great-great-great-grandfather, Désiré LeBlanc, actually was sent from Acadie. And he built a house there, and it's still there. It was 30 years ago, whatever. So, yeah, so, I mean, it's embraced that. I think more in the rural areas, you know, like where I grew up, Scott, you had more French. Everybody spoke French. I mean, even in the court systems, the judge had to speak French with the defendants and everybody else. Now I think it's like it turned a whole lot, in the 80s, to commercialize it, said, oh, well, this is what we have. I mean, because before nobody really cared about it. I mean, in the 70s, that's what I was so adamant about this. I mean, that there was not a lot of young people. I mean, I can count the young people who played my age maybe on one hand. And it was just not that popular. But it was still viable music. And for me, it was just to get this into the schools, because how else are you going to help to perpetuate a culture, but, you know, educate the young. And, and so that's what was my goal to do. It was not about being a musician, I mean, or whatever, doing this for a life thing. This is the last thing I thought I would do. But you just do what you have to do. And, you know, things happen. It just changes. But, yeah, this is, I think it's definitely known for that now. Even New Orleans. Now, New Orleans, they never embraced Cajuns. I mean, we were the heathens from the bayous, you know. There was one guy by the name of John Parsons, who was also James Booker's manager. He had a place called the Maple Leaf Bar. And that was one of the only places in New Orleans where they had Cajun music. That was in the 70s. And Mark Savoie and I played, and Beau Soleil played there in the 70s. And a group called Coteau played there. And then all of a sudden you go down in the quarter and all you hear is Cajun Zydeco. It's like, this is really bizarre, you know.
Well, what about here in Lafayette? You talk about a time when a lot of people knew a lot of music. Mm-hmm. How has Lafayette changed? I mean, obviously, it's a whole lot bigger.
Yeah, well, musical-wise, it used to be a mecca because there was all kind of music. There's a lot of swing, dance, big band kind of sounds. I mean, it goes back to 1916 and before, when they closed Storyville, and like people like Bunk Johnson and Hippolyte Charles moved to the bayous. These were great jazz musicians in New Orleans. They didn't go to New York or Chicago. They had a circuit here, like the Black Eagle Band, etc. And they have places to dance. It was a very proper place. And, you know, it was a mecca of all kind of music. Now, they used to have more dance halls for French music here. There was Webb's Lounge or the Bonton Relais in Lafayette, and even Zydeco Club right down the road. There were a lot of little places that just community places. All this was community. This was not meant for the world in a way, in a sense. It was meant for the community to get together and have a good time and share. But it was a mecca. But all the little towns around here had dance halls. I mean, we weren't the only ones.
Seems to me, and you can correct me, that Lafayette is not the center of Southwest Louisiana Cajun culture, but it's the biggest city. Is that accurate?
Well, what is Cajun culture? You know,
if it's
the self-conscious Cajun culture, mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, Cajun culture exists where Cajuns exist, and they don't have to call it a culture.
Right.
But yes, it was French-speaking. It was founded by Acadians, the Moutons. And it's the largest town in Southwest Louisiana, so that becomes the hub. Eunice is well known for that, but Eunice has actually more French people who have incorporated their Cajunism, although they were directly from France, rather than, you know, the Acadians. The Acadians came through Donaldsonville and came Lafayette basically on the bayous. It was later that people settled what we call the prairies, which is west of Lafayette. Lafayette's sort of the last of the bayou towns founded on bayous. But I mean, it's, the culture exists wherever people exist. because in basically it was a rural area, and you know, you had to make a living, whether you were a subsistence farmer or hunter or whatever you were. I mean, that's where you did it. And this was, the railroad was here, the airport was here, you know, so yeah, so it's the hub, and that's what we call it, a hub city. So it's a hub.
Did the rise of oil move people around a lot, or did it actually help them stay where they were?
Well, okay. First of all, if you're farming and you're toiling every day, you know how difficult that is, and you make, just for example, $10,000 a year, and then the oil company offers you this offshore things where you make $10,000 in 2 months, well, guess what happens? Lafayette was fortunate in the fact that they had, Maurice Hyman had a garden, and but he changed it to the office branches of oil companies and became known as the oil center, where you have white-collar workers. The executives in the oil companies. So Lafayette became known as that. But also, then all of a sudden you have this clash between American culture and a Cajun culture or French culture. And it was something you had to put on the back burner, although you still were who you were. I mean, you know, you go back home and you boil crawfish, whatever, but you have to go somewhere and speak English really well with somebody else. So I think, you know, it's good and bad. Of course, it helped the economy. But environmentally, that's a whole different program that I'd love to be part of to talk about that. So it definitely changed in a lot of ways. I mean, it was inevitable, but some of it's ugly, some of it's not. I mean, you have, it's amazing because it's like you have the Clampett story all around. You have poor farmers and they find oil in their property. I mean, they don't know what to do with millions of dollars. I mean, I knew people, you know, that lived in a house that had a dirt floor. They had more money than they could count, you know? So it's a crazy kind of thing. The Acadians, which brings to the point, in their social strata when they moved from France, and most of my family moved from Loudon, which has got its own reputation. The social strata there was basically, you know, hierarchy, royalty, and peasants. There was never a middle class or anything. I think when people came here, and thanks to our governor, late governor, Huey P. Long, every man a king, you could be a king or a queen because you existed on your property. You knew how to survive. When people came here, they'd have to speak French. If they wouldn't speak French, they wouldn't survive. They wouldn't know how to have help. So I think all that rolled into it and how people have adjusted to the oil company. So it's something that's side by side, you know.
Well, let's get to basics here because you know, Cajun coming from Acadian, and Michael Doucet, trace the root. Who are the Acadians?
Well, the Acadians were original French peasants, basically, who got a free ticket to go to the New World to get out of what was the early 1600s in France. The what we call Acadie now is Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, and Maine, north of the Kennebec River. It was called Acadie from 1604 to about 1713. Basically, the Acadians moved there en masse about 1624. There were families who lived in the area a lot like Louisiana. They were used to water. They used to working. They were fishermen, et cetera. And they found they settled around the Bay of Fundy, and they had many generations there. Unfortunately, because of the French and English wars, Acadie was lost. And Acadie, the name Acadie, comes from a Mi'kmaq named Cadie, which means river. And the French put a preface and it's called L'Acadie, so they become L'Acadienne or Acadians. It's not Arcadia. You know, that's like Longfellow mispronouncing it, which was all a myth anyway, but I think we're a myth too. But anyway, so basically you have these people having, you know, settle in this area, getting along with the Mi'kmaq Indians because that's how you do it. I mean, you know, you don't kill them off, you know, you live among them. But people, you know, get greedy. They wanted their land. So, and there were a lot of Acadians who refused to be, you know, English subjects. So basically it was a very horrible thing. It was called, in French, it's called le grand derangement, which is sort of the big derangement, but where they confiscated the properties. They took 12,000 people, separated families, put them on boats, sent them to all the 13 colonies, which were English, and some went back to France. Both sides of my family actually were sent back to France before getting Spanish land grant in 1761 to come back to Louisiana. So that's the Acadian people. And they settled in this area we call Southwest Louisiana, which was like, man, you know, snakes, alligators, mosquitoes, Native Americans, but anything you want to eat and drink, basically, and grow. And they were here, and they settled here. It was it's like the same thing that people in North Carolina or whatever, in the hollers, how they were separated, how their culture developed, because this was separated by water. The first bridge of the Mississippi River Bridge, I think, was built by U.P. Long in 1923. Other than that, we're basically isolated. And so we survived as a nation here because, like I was mentioning earlier, if you want to survive here, if you came here, you had to speak French. That was the main language. And it wasn't a written French. It was an oral French. We call it Acadian French now because it's a 17th century French. And it's still spoken today, less and less and less and less. So the Acadian people are that kind of people. I mean, and they know, you know, it's like, you know, they knew what it was like and how. They knew the ways and the means of how to exist in North America. Hence, the Acadian culture survived and was established in North America, both in Nova Scotia or New Brunswick, whatever, and in Louisiana. It's the only two places in the world. And because of that, they knew how to exist and work hard, but you play hard too. And because of that, you know, they grew. And they grew and they grew and they grew, and you know, they didn't change. And it's gradually is changing. The example I use, in 1970, there was a sticker. Is there a million French-speaking people in Southwest Louisiana? And we basically have 22 French-speaking parishes. In the year 2000 census, there were less than 100,000 French-speaking people. So that's basically culture, is the language, it's the music, it's the food, you know, and it's the soul. So, I mean, we might lose the language, but I think people will continue. And that's Cajun way.
So, Michael Doucet, let's talk about Zydeco music and Creole music and the music of Creoles in this area. Where does that begin? How does that relate to French culture?
Well, part of it is French culture. I mean, the Creole language is a mixture of African and French. And so obviously from Africa, from slaves, and came here. Although in Louisiana, they had free, what we call free people of color. And they had free people of color who owned plantations. And but the music is derived from that. Creole basically means Criolla from the Spanish, meaning homegrown. And it represents the people who work for them. And then it represents the cuisine. And of course, it represents the music. Now, in New Orleans, Creole has a different connotation than it does here in the bayous. And Creole, obviously, is a mixture. Like Jelly Roll Martin was a Creole. Could read music. Louis Armstrong was not. And he could not read music. Or he probably learned later. But it was a difference. Now, after the Jim Crow laws, everybody, if you were 1/8 black or something like that, that's how you had to sign the birth certificate, whatever. And so there was a very class distinction over there, and the Creoles had their own class, they had their own balls, they had the first black orchestra in New Orleans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's been here in Louisiana for a long time. When you come out to the bayous here like that, right here, you have a different kind of people. It's a rural people. I would say they're not, you know, the term African-Americans. I think they're African-French people, which definitely differentiates them from any other people, because they're from Louisiana. Their lineage from wherever they came from established in Louisiana. So you have a rural music, and I think I spoke a little bit about Amadé Ardoin being the first black accordion player to record, which... Now his music is used by both African-French musicians or Zydeco musicians and Cajun musicians, because he played with a white fiddler by the name of Dennis McGee. And so I think the music, two cultures, like we were talking about, living side by side, sharing a lot of things, but still you have that separation of color here. But, I mean, you know, it's like we're pretty dark. We have, Acadians have this olive skin. And I just think it's what you hear and how you grow up, and people like good music. Like someone And I should mention this to you. Josh Caffrey just wrote a book about the Lomax recordings, and he has a sentence in there that kind of sticks out. It's like people wanted to play popular black music in the 20s because of New Orleans. I mean, look what New Orleans did. I mean, they brought out, I mean, come on, I mean, from... And you know, and the thing about having Bunk Johnson right here in the bayous of Southwest Louisiana is pretty amazing. Bunk Johnson died in like 1947, so I never knew him. I love his music, but Hippolyte Charles, who used to play with him, who actually played with Buddy Bolden, was still alive, and I interviewed him, and he was the most refined and wonderful person. He lived in a little, well, beautiful Creole cottage in Parks, Louisiana, and he gave the land across the way to the church. So they established that Creole culture here in Southwest Louisiana as it was in New Orleans, because the Creole culture, and I'm saying the black French Creole culture in New Orleans, was basically artisans. I mean, there were musicians, there were sculptors, there were glass blowers, there were iron forgers. It was artistic. I mean, and people appreciated their artistic quality no matter what they did or whatever they did. And I think that is like an integrity that you can't buy and you can't really label, and it gets totally homogenized in this American culture. And I think that's what's wonderful here, because we maintain the music, a way of life, cuisine, etc., which are distinctly different, although side by side.
Michael Doucet of Beausoleil. Now a couple of performances from a Beausoleil visit to the cafe in 1998. The Lafayette Cajun Band had come to define Cajun music and culture over their career, winning multiple Grammys and contributing soundtrack music to films like The Big Easy and Bel Air the Cajun. Here are a couple of songs from that session, starting with Newsreel. Thank you. The Eunice Two-Step and Newsreel, two tunes from Beausoleil, recorded live for the World Cafe in 1998. Special thanks to the Wincode Foundation for a grant making our Sense of Place series possible.